seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Jordan Buscarini alongside Travis Anderson. Typically, we take Labor Day off, but with the excellent weekend of college football, we had to jump in the studio and do today's show live. No best of today, because Travis, it was a great weekend for college football. It's back, and I know it ends here tonight, week one, as Florida State takes on Boston College. But the hype over the weekend, it definitely lived up to it.
Yeah, we had some good matchups. Texas, A&M, Notre Dame. Notre Dame gets to win there. Miami goes into the swamp and really takes it to Florida. And then USC knocks off LSU, so the mighty SEC struggled this weekend.
Yeah, there were four major games that involved the SEC in non-conference showdowns this weekend, and Georgia just belted Clemson in the second half of their game, so they get the win there. But, as you said, all the talk about the SEC, Mike Elko's first game as head coach of Texas A&M, they were a game opponent, but they were favored. They were favored to beat Notre Dame, so technically I guess that's an upset, right? Then you look at the USC-LSU game, and that was a very fascinating game. That lived up to the kickoff in Vegas. The last time USC played in Vegas, it didn't go quite so well, right?
No, it didn't. You got to go back when they lost to Utah. But for USC, I think that's the first time that they beat a ranked opponent to open things up since like a neutral site or road game since Auburn, all the way back when Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart were there.
That's right, because they also had Alabama in a neutral site game.
Yeah, and Alabama kicked their butt.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that game coming up in just a bit. I saw some great things from USC. Obviously, some rework on the defensive side of the ball, and we can get into that in just a bit. And then Miami just throttling Florida at the swamp. And so it was not a good weekend for the SEC. We'll get into some college football talk in just a bit. What should the rankings look like? Look, this is the reason why preseason rankings stink. They have no meaning whatsoever. Top four teams in the country right now, well, it should be the four teams that we just talked about winning. Georgia knocked off a ranked team. Notre Dame beat Texas A&M. USC beat LSU, and Miami beat Florida. That's why the rankings are so meaningless early on. So we will get into that in just a bit here on Drive Time Sports. If you were bored this afternoon and you had Netflix, no, it wasn't Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, which is coming to Netflix in a couple of months, but we had Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi going at it in the hot dog eating contest. Were you at all intrigued by this?
No, I didn't even know it was on until you told me.
I was intrigued by it. I really was, because I think competitive eating is like morbidly entertaining. It's morbidly entertaining. 4th of July, we typically don't have a show. I'm hanging around the house, relaxing, barbecuing. I'll watch the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Didn't have Joey Chestnut this year, so I wasn't interested in the least. So we had our own movie eat-off down here. We had Dave and Ryan from Dave and Ryan's Movie Review, and you and I did play-by-play for it. It was more entertaining to me than the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, because Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi are the only two names I really know in that realm, because it's not, I mean, that is a fringe sport at best, and I use sport in quotation marks. But Joey Chestnut was absolutely incredible today. He knocks off Kobayashi. If you were even remotely curious about it, it wasn't even close. I don't think anyone can compete with Joey Chestnut. I can't believe we're talking about this here on the show today, but this guy ate 83 hot dogs in 10 minutes. 83 hot dog and buns.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's disgusting to hear those numbers, and it makes me sick right now just hearing what you just said. It
doesn't make you want a hot dog?
No, not at all.
Ah, that took place today. And again, we got a college football matchup tonight with Florida State and Boston College. Outside of that, Major League Baseball going on. And if you weren't paying attention over the weekend, division races, we're getting down to it. I mean, we're down to the final 25 games or so in the season. And so every game from here on out really has a different kind of meaning to it. I think we are down to 25 games exactly. And so in the AL East, there is a battle for that first round bye between the Yankees and the Orioles. Right now, separated by a half game. The Guardians have now opened up a 3.5-game lead on the Twins and the Royals. Just less than a week ago, we were talking about the Royals running away with that division. They were playing lights-out baseball. They've now dropped 5 straight games. They've lost 7 out of their last 10. And so the Guardians 3.5 up now on the Twins and the Royals, who were tied for second. And then the Astros are running away with the West. They have 75 wins right now, 75-62. So that's what's happening in the AL as far as divisional races. In the National League, starting to see some separation as well. So the Phillies have now expanded their lead to 7 games on the Braves, the Brewers 9.5 up on the Cubs, and the Dodgers, who were just 2.5 games up on the Diamondbacks and Padres, they've now stretched that to 5 games. The Dodgers right now going up against the Diamondbacks in a really, really big game. They're handling their business in this 4-game set with Arizona. But these games, they all have a little extra meaning right now.
Yeah, they do. I think you can pretty much cement who's going to make the playoffs. I think the only thing we don't know if it's going to be Atlanta or New York.
Yeah, I think so. In the American League, 4.5 games separate the Red Sox and the Tigers. Can you believe that? The Tigers are 5 games out of the playoffs in the American League. Isn't that something?
1-8 of 10. Yeah, the Tigers. No one thought the Tigers would be 5 out at this point.
No, the Mariners have completely fallen off at 5.5 out. So right now in the AL, Orioles, Twins, Royals, they all have a stranglehold on those final wild card spots. National League, Diamondbacks and Padres are both tied for 2 of the 3 spots, and then you have the Braves a game up on New York. The Cubs, however,
maybe not count the Cubs out yet.
Maybe not,
back.
Man. They've won 9 out of 10. They've won 6 consecutive games, and they're just 3 out. So maybe not.
Yeah, I seen that they scored 99 runs over like a 10-game stretch. Hasn't happened since 1900.
Yeah, they're playing very, very well. So again, baseball right now hitting its most important stretch of the regular season. We do have a few games going on at the moment. The Orioles all over the White Sox right now, 11-2. The Guardians topping the Royals, looking to expand on that lead. The Astros and Reds are tied right now. The Dodgers over the Diamondbacks by 2 runs at this moment. Still to come tonight, those Tigers taking on the San Diego Padres. Important game for both teams. Twins, Rays at 4:50. Mariners, A's at 5:07. We get the Red Sox and the Mets at 5:10. Neither of those two teams are out of the playoff chase yet, so that actually is a fairly important game at Wrigley Field. City Field, excuse me.
That's a big game. Like you said, Red Sox, Mets, Severino on the mound. New York needs that more than Boston does, but Boston's right there. I just don't think the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs.
I don't either. I don't think they have enough. Now, Wrigley Field, we got the Cubs and the Pirates, so pay attention to that. Jameson Taillon will be on the mound for the Cubs in a game that they desperately need over a team of the Pirates who have not played great baseball as of late. Yankees, Rangers at 6:05, and one final earlier today. Brewers top the Cardinals 9-3. So we do have plenty to get into here today on Drive Time Sports. We are going to talk local sports in just a moment. Next segment, we'll replay our interview from Friday night with Emory football coach John Famalo. Emory got their 3-0 start, their first 3-0 start since 2002. Trevin Gilbert had himself an evening. He completed 23 of 30 passes, went for over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns as Emory topped Enterprise. And the Carbon Dinos did fall on Friday night, but that was a good Ogden team. And Travis, they battled. Coach Rushton, he's got this team moving in the right direction.
Yeah, the Dinos are going to be a tough out for whoever plays them.
Yeah, the days of Carbon losing by 5 scores are gone.
Yep.
It's gone. I agree with you. It is going to be a tough out for whoever they play. We'll talk high school football. That's coming up in just a moment. It's Drive Time Sports Labor Day edition. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Welcome back into Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Local sports segment, which of course is brought to you by Eastern Utah Community Credit Union. They have spirit cards. Showcase your fanhood for Emory, Carbon, or Grand High School. All you have to do is go into one of the Eastern Utah Community Credit Union branches, and you can get your free Emory, Carbon, or Grand Spirit Card today. Eastern Utah Community Credit Union bringing you this local sports segment. Emory football moves to 3-0, first time since 2002. They have an opportunity to get to 4-0 for the first time since 1995 this Friday when they travel on the road to take on the Manti Templars. They blast through Enterprise this past Friday, and it was just an overall stellar performance for this team. They looked the part, they dominated, and never trailed, taking an early lead on the opening drive. Following that victory, we had a chance to catch up with Coach John Famalo. Here's that interview from the Sutherland's broadcast booth.
Coach, I always look forward to these post-game interviews. I appreciate you coming up again.
Well, I'm glad you still look forward to them. I don't know. We've been doing it a long time, yeah. So it's good you're still looking forward to it.
Yeah. Friday nights after a win wouldn't be the same without you, Coach.
I appreciate it.
We get to 3-0. I know that's difficult to do. I mean, really, I was going back and looking over the record books. It's been a while since we've been 3-0.
Yeah. I mean, you gave me that statistic this week, and so it was surprising how long it's been. And so it's a great accomplishment to these kids and to our program and my coaches. And, you know, we just kind of continue to grind it. And so, you know, happy to be 3-0.
Coach, I want to talk about the way the game started. I mean, the offense did not have a hard time moving the football, but you go empty backfield right out of the gate, and we see Trevin kind of just pick the secondary apart. What did you see defensively based off of last week against South Sevier that made you say, hey, if we go empty backfield, we're going to be able to pick our spots offensively?
I felt like, again, they load the box up. I was expecting a forefront. They went to an odd front, kind of like they played us last year,
yep.
And those outside backers do a really good job coming down hard, and so that opened a lot of stuff up for us right behind them, to slip behind them, and Deacon did a great job, Braxton did a great job, and then we started working the edges with Porter and Hayden, and you know, it was Trevin made some great decisions, made some great passes, and so I was happy to see him be really efficient, take care of the ball, and put it on people.
I was a little bit surprised as well. I expected the 4-2-5 to come out.
Yeah.
That's not what we got.
No. And I think they know. I mean, they've played us enough. They know we like to throw the ball around. So no, you're going to have guys over the top. And our kids took what they gave us, sat in spots, and Trevin was able to deliver it. And so, you know, I was happy our kids kind of, you know, were disciplined and stuck to the game plan, didn't look for the home run ball always, and just kind of sat in spots, and Trevin did a good job getting on the ball.
Yeah, these unofficial stats that I have on Trevin tonight, he goes 23 of 30, 322 yards, 4 touchdowns. That's a great night.
That's a really good night. Yeah, I'll take that any night. So he does a good job. And when he picks his spots and throws it, he does a really good job. So I'm happy to see those numbers.
Some injury issues, as you and I talked about a little bit earlier this week. Ty Yost gets to start out of the backfield. We saw that he could be dynamic. I mean, he hits the hole fast.
Yeah, no, he's a pretty good athlete. He's worked hard over the summer to get his body prepped. And so nice he's able to transition and help us a little bit in the backfield there. We're a little shorthanded right now, but you know, I think he's going to be pretty good once he starts getting a feel. And we kind of talked a little bit about that transition from a slot or even an outside to a running back. It's a little bit it's different, you know, maybe from going from a slot to an outside. And so, you know, I was just happy to see him be able to run the ball well. I can't say we ran it really good as well as I'd like to, as we did last week, but you know, I think our kids understand what the defense was doing and took what they gave us.
Yeah, I had about 80 yards on the ground tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I'd love more, but I mean, the way we were throwing the ball and the way kids were sitting in the zone, I thought we did a good job.
Yeah, there's always context, right, to every statistic.
Yeah. No, and like I say, our outside game, we've got to figure that piece out. That's the one thing I still, you know, those fast screens on the outside, our kids have got to get a little bit more physical. That's kind of our bread and butter. If their inside run game's not working, it's just an extension of our run, and that hasn't been. As three games, we haven't been really stellar on that, and I think that's one we're going to have to really work on that.
Really just one blip on defense from this first unit. Happened to be the very first play from scrimmage.
Yeah.
We know they're capable of doing that. Strong is such a talented player. First off, what happened on that play, Coach, and then how did you guys fix that moving forward?
We just had – I mean, Hayden was on that outside, and he was kind of given, and then they were able to iso on my safety, which – my safety shouldn't be ISO, and he should be with a kid kind of running free, but they did a good job getting on him, on Yost, and then, I mean, at that point, the kid was off to the races and in the secondary, and there's not much we could have done after that. So we were playing so tight, but I feel like just adjustment-wise, it was like, hey, we've got to be really physical on those edges, and I thought we did a whole lot better job after that. From that point on, I felt like we did a good job. I mean, with the exception of the last couple drives, had a lot of subs in, but, you know, we give up the last score, it is what it is, but I felt like at least from that middle of the first quarter to probably midway through the third, I thought we were pretty stout.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great wake-up call.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Unfortunately, it cost 6 points, but it is a great wake-up call. That entire first half seemed to be played on their side of the field, and I kept looking up the score of it, 21-6, 27-6. It kind of had the vibe, Coach, of a 42-49-6 game, but it was 21-6. I mean, that's a physical group that managed to hang around maybe a little bit longer than they should have.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job. It's one of those. I felt like we got in the red zone a couple times. We stalled out, and you know, I kick a field goal. Hopefully it's one of those things that I think it's a good time to practice those types of things because you never know when it's going to come into play. So we ended up kicking 2 field goals where probably usually we would go for it. And so who knows? Maybe you don't get anything out of it. Maybe you do. But real conservative on my play, or, you know, at least that end of it, just to kind of felt like the game was in control. Let's practice some things that we don't necessarily normally do or maybe really good at right now and try to get good at it. And so, you know, I feel like maybe we left a couple scores out there, but at the end of the day, you know, it was nice to be able to see the field goal go through, the one, and also the 30-yarder was just, I mean, on the pole. So, you never know when you're going to need those things, and it's one thing to practice them. It's another thing to do it when the lights are on and in the crowds. And so it's good to Jaden feel that, see our blocking assignments. And so, you know, happy we got 1 out of 2.
Yeah, I can connect that to so many conversations that you and I have had. I mean, I remember a game years ago where we had to spike the ball in the 2-minute drill, and kids were kind of lost there for a minute. You know what I'm talking
oh, yeah,
about, right?
No, exactly.
Right? So it's one of those things. It's just different when you do it here. We saw it last week with Union. I mean, that onside kick that they had at the end of the game was stellar, right?
And
you and I talked about that. So, you know, I can connect the dots to some of the conversations that we've had. Getting live game reps, you can't compare that to anything in practice.
No, you can't. As much as you try to, you know, whether you tie sprints or something like that, some type of conditioning to it, it's not nearly the same when you're in the lights and doing it in real time. And so I say I'm hoping it pays off. You know, I felt like, I say again, it was one of those, I felt like our game was under control. Defensively, we were playing really well. Offensively, you know, maybe you score, maybe you don't, but at the end of the day, I was like, I say, I felt good about, you know, our kicking game and where we're at with that.
You'll probably be able to answer this question a little bit better, Coach, when we talk next week, but the ascension, the trajectory of this team and getting better throughout 3 weeks, you know, the whole process, sometimes that's more important than wins and losses, although it's better to improve while you're winning. But still, are you happy with the steps that they are taking now 3 weeks deep into the season?
Yeah, I am. Honestly, I felt like these were 3 games that were going to be tough ones, but ones we should get, and so our kids got them. And so, you know, happy that we're in that position to be 3-0 and preparing ourselves to play a really good Manti team. And I think that's our next challenge is let's play a really – it's just – I think that the challenge – the test is getting more and more or greater and greater every week. And so I feel like hopefully our level of play matches those types of teams that we're going to have to play.
I think it only gets more difficult from here on out.
Yeah.
You know, Manti on the road, Carbon at home, and that's a rivalry game, right?
Yep.
A lot of emotion. And then once we start region play – yeah, it's a tough region all the way around.
Yep.
And so I remember talking at the beginning of the year, and we were talking about a win total, which we don't necessarily have to get into, but hard to get to that mark if you don't take care of the first 3 games of the season.
No, that's what I say. It's easy to reject and look out and think, okay, hey, these are winnable games, whatnot, and just based off of whether coaches are changing, whether they lose a lot of seniors. And so you look at that overall scheme and you kind of say, okay, here's the scheme and the layout of it that we feel like we can, you know, put ourselves in a really good position. But it's another thing to do it.
Yep.
And especially in what we've, you know, been ravaged with a few injuries, that's a positive, I feel like, you know, because seasons can turn on their heads pretty quick with a few key injuries. And I feel like we've had some key injuries, but kids have continued to perform and we've got wins. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, as we talk about the injuries, I mean, it seems like it's never an excuse, but it is always a reality, right? And so you and I have talked about the depth, I think, going back all the way to June, and the depth's been tested already.
Yeah, no, it's something on the offensive line. That's the one, the thing that goes a lot, you know, doesn't really get seen a ton from fans, but from coaches, it's nice to be able to see. We've plugged some kids in some different positions up front, and, you know, they've excelled and done well, and so I'm happy for that because that just gives Trev more time and allows, you know, our weapons to be able to get the ball. And so, you know, really, really pleased with that.
I know Caleb O'Neill, not necessarily 100%, but you may have to cut that kid's leg off to keep him out of the field.
Yeah. No, he's going to die on the field if that's what it's going to take. Just a great leader, great kid, and just works hard. And he had a really good night defensively and offensively. I felt like he was really physical up front.
Well, now it's on to Manti, Coach. There's not a lot of road games left. We only have three remaining on this regular season schedule. So we do have that long weekend, though, with Labor Day. How do you guys handle that? I mean, is it just business as usual on Monday?
It is. I mean, we got to come back to practice. It's one of those things. It's unfortunate. The kids want to be off and relax. As coaches, I want to get after it because I want to prep for the next week. And so it's that balance of saying, okay, hey, let's take some time. But at the same time, we got to get back at it because, we got work to do. And so I think our kids understand that. I think they recognize, okay, it's a holiday. I'm going to enjoy myself. But at 5:30, we're back here on the field and getting back to work.
Yeah, the only thing better than 3-0 is 4-0, right?
Yeah, hey, hey, why not? I mean, these kids are playing hard, and I think it's one of those games. If we show up and play our A game and get after it, there's no reason we can't win that game.
Coach, I appreciate you taking out the time to come up. Congratulations on that 3-0 start. I know we'll talk again next week and start prepping for Manti.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. I really appreciate you.
Again, that's our post-game interview with Coach John Famalo on Friday night as Emory takes out Enterprise 37-14. You can get the full recap and write-up right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to flip, talk college football. Big game last night, USC tops LSU. We had a lengthy conversation about this game last week on the show. Who needed it more? Was it LSU or was it USC? I thought it was LSU, which means today, well, that booster club and the fan base and the alumni are probably not too happy. We'll talk about that when we return. It's Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.
No sleep till!
Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
A big weekend for college football last night. Might have been the main event. We had LSU and USC at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. This game comes down to the wire. USC grabs a 27-20 win. How about it? Lincoln Riley finally had a competent defense. It's about time. Travis is sitting across from me right now, decked out in his Trojan gear. Yeah, it was probably nice to sit back, watch a big game, and not watch USC give up 40.
Yeah, don't give up 20-plus yards each time, right? I think last year they gave up 90 plays of 20-plus throughout the whole year. I think that's over with now. USC tackled much better. They played much cleaner, and it's nice to see a defense at USC come in and play really good football against LSU.
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway last night from this USC game was Miller Moss looks the part, and we knew he would being under Lincoln Riley because that's what Lincoln Riley is known for. If it's Caleb Williams, if it's been Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, just go down the list. But he looked the part. Defensively, yes, they looked better, but I still have questions about the offense for LSU because Nussmeier comes in, and we got to remember, while Miller Moss is taking over for Caleb Williams, Nussmeier's taking over for Jaden Daniels. He's taking over for the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. And the one thing that has always plagued Brian Kelly, and we'll talk about BK in a moment, but the one thing that's always plagued him is really average play at quarterback. Okay, so yes, the USC defense to me looked drastically better last night. I think the USC defense over the last couple of years would have given up big plays at the end of that game, and they probably would have lost. That's what we've seen time and time again. However, when I look at what USC has on their schedule, we're going to find out quick because Utah State coming up this weekend, whatever. But after that, you get Michigan, you get Wisconsin. We know that Wisconsin is going to be a very physical team, right? They still have Penn State. They'll have Nebraska. They'll have Washington. The defense is going to get tested. They pass the first test, But for me last night, it was how efficiently they were able to move the football on the offensive side of the ball. Because USC is still going to have to score points to win games. This is not a top 10 defense in the country. We know that, right? They still have to score points. And last night, Miller Moss threw for nearly 400 yards in this game.
Yeah, Miller Moss comes in. So two starts, two career starts. Go back to the bowl game last year against number 15 Louisville. Set a record there. He was awesome. And then this game against LSU. So Miller Moss, like you said, looks the part. He's going to be fine. The defense, I think, will get better each week. But yeah, the offense has to score points. And we'll see what Michigan's all about this Saturday coming up against Texas. But I think that's a winnable game in the big house for USC in 2 weeks.
Kyren Hudson last night had the catch of the year. I'm telling you right now, it's week one, and we will not see a better catch than what he had last night. Because we see, you know, Odell Beckham, we see that all the time, right? It was a tremendous catch against the Cowboys. It was prime time. Everybody was watching that night. Not taking anything away from Odell. This was, like, extraordinarily better than Odell's catch. And the reason I say that is because Hudson is in between two defenders, falling backwards, grabs it with one hand, and brings it in with the other. It was an incredible catch. That was the play of the weekend, hands down.
Yeah, he had two really good catches. He had that one. That's the catch of the year. And then the one in the fourth quarter, which set up the touchdown right after, where he got the targeting call, got hit in the head. I don't know how he held on to the football to begin with after that hit, but yeah, he had two good catches in that game.
And the one catch that I'm talking about early on in the game was first quarter, that first catch, right?
So
right out of the gate. If we're talking about the way Miller Moss played last night, he dropped that ball in between three LSU defenders. The pass was put where only Kyren Hudson could go get it, and I'm sure the percentage of him going up and grabbing that ball was probably less than 20%. But still, Moss put that in between three LSU defenders where only his guy had a chance to grab it. I know we're going to talk about the catch, rightfully so. It was incredible. But to me, that specific toss really just kind of showcased the entire night that Moss had.
Yeah, Miller Moss also had the one with the free play because LSU was offside to Jacoby Lane. He put that right in the bucket.
Big win for USC, no doubt. I think that the Trojans probably dropped two games this season, just being in the Big Ten. I think that one of these games, one of the games that they would have to win, there was four on the schedule. You and I talked about this last week, right? There were four potential losses on the schedule. This was one of them. Okay, so now we look at it and say, at most, three losses for this team. And if you can find a way to knock off Michigan, you're a playoff team. I really believe that this team would get into the postseason if they find a way to win one of those other three games that we look at and say, boy, it's going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, they catch a break because they get some of those Big Ten teams, those tough ones at home with Penn State, Nebraska coming in. But yeah, this was a game you looked at where you're like, all right, they're probably going to lose this one, maybe lose to Notre Dame, maybe to Michigan, Penn State. There's four.
Yep.
Well, they've already chopped one off. So now they're staring at the barrel as a bottom playoff team.
Now, the talk last week here on the show was which coach needed this win more. And I mean, with you being a USC guy, I think your bias immediately says Lincoln Riley has to win this, but I look at where Lincoln Riley has taken the USC program over the last 3 years. You had a head coach prior to Lincoln Riley that was just downright dreadful.
You don't say his name because we're not talking about him.
You don't want to talk about... No, okay, we won't say his name.
No.
But the program was in a terrible spot. Okay, and it takes time to get out of that. Now you've switched conferences. USC always plays a very difficult schedule. I'm not saying LSU doesn't. I'm just saying that there was a rebuilding phase that had to take place at USC. That wasn't necessarily the case with LSU. Ed Orgeron has won a national championship with LSU. Joe Burrow is not that far removed from his days at LSU. Brian Kelly left a situation where he had Notre Dame on the brink, and he goes to LSU, and they expected instant success. I expected instant success. Because I still believe he's a top five coach in the country. I believe that. However, they have now lost eight games in two seasons in one game. That's what they've lost. Eight for
he's
Brian
20
Kelly.
And eight since he's been there.
He's 20-8. Lincoln Riley, I believe, is 20-8 now, correct? They have the exact same record. So when I look at who needed this game more, to me it was Brian Kelly and LSU because it's a school that got rid of a national championship winning coach to bring in Brian Kelly to elevate this program for a level of consistency. And we haven't seen that level of consistency. I mean, if we go back and just look at last year, okay, well, now Brian Kelly is 0-3 in season openers with LSU. So at no point in time has this guy ever been undefeated at LSU. Think about that for a second. But last year, they got waxed by Florida State in the season opener. That game was not even close. They gave up a 55 spot to Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. They got beat by two scores to a weaker Alabama team last season. He was outcoached by Nick Saban. We go back to his first year at LSU. They flubbed up the season opener against Florida State. They got boat raced by Tennessee. They got beat by Texas A&M, and they got just, again, walloped by Georgia. It hasn't necessarily been all sunshine and rainbows for Brian Kelly. He's got one signature win in two seasons at LSU, and that was an overtime victory over Alabama. That is it.
Yeah, for the next couple weeks, so he's going to catch a break with the schedule, and it's going to mask what happened because they play Nichols, South Carolina, UCLA. UCLA is horrible. I mean, they should have lost to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And they play South Alabama. So you have to go to all the way to October 12th before they play another significant opponent, which is Ole Miss.
And that's coming off a bye week, which would help. It will help, there's no doubt. But once you get to October 12th, okay, this is why I don't think Brian Kelly's on the hot seat right now. I don't. But I think that that seat could get a lot warmer as the season goes on, because just look at this. Ole Miss, October 12th, okay? Then you get Arkansas on the road. Then it's at Texas A&M. You got to go to Kyle Field in College Station.
What a weird place.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a weirdo school.
We can talk about A&M in a moment. That's a good team. Mike Elko's a good coach. He's a very good coach. Then you got to go to, they play a host to Alabama. But that's a four-game stretch where I could see LSU legitimately going 1-3. Ole Miss, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Alabama. And let's say they go 1-3 during that stretch. That's a four-loss team. Brian Kelly becomes extremely hot if that's the case. That's why last night's game was so important. I think you tell me if I'm wrong, you pay much closer attention to the USC, the boosters, the alum, the vibe around the program. Lincoln Riley could have afforded that loss last night. I don't think Brian Kelly could afford that based off of the lack of patience that LSU has shown over the last four seasons, and also knowing that he's got a month of football where it's murderer's row. Not to mention, they got to go to Florida as well. And I know the Gators looked awful this past weekend against Miami, but that is a team Napier will get them playing better football. So they will play five games. Get a load of that schedule again. Ole Miss, Arkansas, A&M, Alabama, Florida. And three of those five games are on the road.
The last game of the season is against Oklahoma. And their schedule is going to get tough starting in October. But yeah, Lincoln Riley's fine. I know, of course he is. Paul Feinbaum, he's an idiot. He got in there and said that they should fire him for Deion Sanders. Well, Deion Sanders is almost lost his opening game to, what, North Dakota State?
Yeah.
And that's who you want to bring in to replace.
Yeah, no.
Lincoln had this team in the playoffs year one. They lost in the Pac-12 title game and got knocked off. So,
yep.
I mean, he was on the brink in year one.
Yeah, I think because USC has lost big games late in the season, we tend to forget just how good Lincoln Riley has been at times at USC. And I also think that we have forgotten just the shape of the program. The problem with Brian Kelly is he had one thing follow him at Notre Dame. He could not win big games late in the season. Now he's losing games early in the season with LSU, and they're not able to pull them out late in the season either. He's lost eight games already as the LSU head coach. That's a problem. Last night was a big game for them. I think they needed it worse. I really do. Because, again, I see a pathway for LSU. I see four losses. I really think this team ends up with four losses. I look at SC right now, at most, they have three. That's why that game was so crucial. And you can get into the postseason. You can get into the 12-team playoff with three losses. You're not getting in with four. You can get in with three. And I think that's also important to take note of.
Yeah, USC gets Utah State coming up to win that game. They go into Michigan and beat Michigan. They're 3-0. They're going to be in the playoffs.
I agree. You could then lose your two other big games. You could lose the finale.
Penn State, Notre Dame.
You could lose last game of the season to Notre Dame, and you're still going to get into the playoffs if you have wins over LSU and Michigan.
Because the Big Ten road schedule for USC, they're at Minnesota, at Maryland, at Washington, and at UCLA. Those are not difficult Big Ten.
No. And they never play back-to-back road games.
No.
They never play, but they alternate every single week. The other thing about USC, I think they're going to be tested by Wisconsin. I think that's going to be a game that they may struggle with.
Old friend Alex Grinch coming back.
Yeah, well, but they play physical.
Yeah, they do.
And that's what I worry about with USC and UCLA going into the Big Ten, right? How do you hold up against this physical brand of football? Because that's what the Big Ten is built on. But again, you're going to be favored in every game outside of Michigan and Notre Dame. I think you're favored in every game from here on out because you have Penn State coming to the Coliseum. So USC set themselves up beautifully with this win last night.
That's what you have to do. Set yourself up and then make a run, get in that Big Ten title game at the end of the season. If you play well enough, which they have a chance now. It's going to be interesting, though. We'll see. Let's not, put the horse in front of the cart too early.
No,
with USC.
You don't want to overreact. It is week one.
But it's a great win for the program.
It is. It is. And it's a bad loss for LSU. It's a bad loss for that squad. It is. It's a bad loss for Brian Kelly. And he was obviously distraught last night. He was extremely frustrated as he sat down at the podium last night. He actually punched the table.
Yeah, but that's on him. He's the coach. He can't be throwing his kids under the bus.
Yeah, well, he said that. He said he's got to coach better. But they continue to lose games. And if we're being honest, should they have lost that game last night? They had every opportunity to win that game.
Yeah, they just played stupid. Too many penalties. 10 yep. penalties for 99 yards. You score a touchdown and you're shooting a gun at a player? Come on, guys.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
You can't be that dumb.
Outlandish, right? Outlandish. USC picks up a big win last night over LSU. Let's pause for just a moment. We'll come back. One more college football segment straight ahead here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Back to the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Sutherland Studios, Jordan Buscarini alongside Travis Anderson. We talked about USC, LSU. Travis, I want to move into Saturday's games here over the last few minutes. We'll start with Notre Dame, Texas A&M. That was the primetime game on Saturday night. Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame go in defensively. I think this is one of the best defensive units in the country. And I think that's what's going to continue to propel Notre Dame. I think the offense is a little bit of a work in progress. They have a very young offensive line. But you go to Kyle Field and you hold your opponent to 13 points. You get a road win. It's a huge victory for Notre Dame on Saturday night. Big win.
Yeah, you go down to Weirdo University, pick up a great win for Notre Dame. It's hard for me to hate Notre Dame because I like their coach so much. I respect him. I think he's a great guy. And usually Notre Dame has a bunch of idiot players that I don't like, but I like most of their roster. I do. I think those are great kids.
Notre Dame has idiot players you don't
yeah,
like?
Yeah, I just never really liked Notre Dame till I
Ooh.
Love their coach.
Ooh.
Just all of them.
Oh, come on.
Brady Quinn.
Brady Quinn's
Jeff Samardzija.
Brady Quinn's a class act.
I like him now, but yeah, good for Notre Dame. It's a great win.
Listen, Notre Dame, for the most part, Notre Dame, they do things the right way. I always put Notre Dame and BYU in the same conversation. I think those are two programs that typically do things the right way. Notre Dame gets a win on Saturday. Huge, huge, huge. I expect Notre Dame now to be undefeated when they play USC at the end of the season. I really don't see anyone that trips them up. Louisville might be a difficult game.
Their schedule's cake all the way till USC.
They typically play one of
them. They deserve it. Why? SEC does the same crap year in and year out.
I agree. They finally have a schedule that benefits them. I expect them to be undefeated. So Notre Dame, big winners, but I think the biggest winner of week one, to me, it had to be Georgia. 34-3 win over Clemson. They're up 6-0 at the end of the first half, and they were just fantastic over the final two quarters. Georgia's going to be a problem.
Yeah, for Clemson, I think I'll spin it to them. Dabo, he doesn't want to go to the transfer portal, doesn't want anything to do with it.
He's going to have to.
And you can't dip back down into that poll now once you say that you're not going to do it.
No, he's got to do it.
But he has to.
He has to.
Because Clemson, they're not going to be very good if he doesn't.
We were talking about this last night, a couple of us. Notre Dame at one point in time refused red shirts. They would not redshirt. It did not happen at Notre Dame. They didn't believe in it. They went away from that. Why? Because you have to use the red shirt, right? This is the same thing with the portal. College football is changing. I respect Dabo for trying to win the way he wants to win, but you have to play the game. And the second half was really embarrassing for Clemson on Saturday. Georgia, big winners. Clemson also had stellar quarterback play for about 6-7 years. They don't have that right now. There's problems. I think Georgia was the big winner. A team that I was just in love with last week, and I still am, it's one game, but Oregon looked awful on Saturday, didn't they?
Yeah, Oregon barely hanging on to beat Idaho. a lot of question marks, I think, still with Oregon.
And Dylan Gabriel was fine. 380 yards, had a couple of touchdowns. Dan Lanning, I believe in. I think they're going to figure it out. And then, of course, Miami knocking off Florida. Now, Miami's number 19 in the country. When the rankings come out, they're going to look a little bit different. They're obviously going to be higher than 19. To me, this is a bigger indictment on Florida than it is how good Miami is, although Mario Cristobal really needed this game. He needs a very, very successful season. There's problems right now in the swamp, and I don't know how much longer Napier is going to be there. You want to talk about hot seats? His is burning right now.
Yeah, I'll start with Oregon. They have a tough game against Boise State coming up this Saturday. I think that's going to be a very good game. And then I think you can lock two teams into the playoff already. That's Notre Dame, and that's Miami.
You think so?
Those two are locks.
I agree with Notre Dame, Miami. Yeah, probably.
I just don't think Miami's schedule, there's anything on there that's going to sway me to say, and they're not going to make the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, the next 3 weeks, they got Florida A&M, they got Ball State, they got South Florida. They still play Vautech. Vautech, that was not good.
No, that's a bad team.
If you missed what happened at Virginia Tech, that might have been one of the most damning losses of the weekend. Vanderbilt gets them 34-27. Clark Leah doing a great job at Vanderbilt.
Miami might be undefeated.
They very well may. I mean, I'm looking at the Miami schedule right now, and you just go down the list. Yeah, after Vautech, they got California. Louisville is going to be a tough game. That's on the road. They still have Florida State. That's going to be a tough game. You got Duke, you got Georgia Tech, who I think is much, much improved. So there are some tests, but yes, it's possible that Miami is undefeated, no doubt.
Yeah, Notre Dame, Miami, lock it, they're in.
And Notre Dame, regardless, they could be number one in the country. They go into the playoffs as number five. Yep. That's just the way it works under the new format.
And they deserve that schedule. And if that's how it's going to be, and they don't get rewarded if they're undefeated to be a 1, 2, 3, or 4, and they have to be a 5, then they should play that schedule every year.
No, I agree. I think the playoff format is fair in that regard. Week 1 college football almost in the books. Week 0 last week, Florida State suffered a loss to Georgia Tech, and the Seminoles are going to try to get back on the winning side of the scoreboard here in about 30 minutes. They're going to kick things off with Boston College, which means our time for the day is done. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll see you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.